by Story City Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour today, along with Pat Schlerbaum and KHOI station manager Mike Murphy. Well, Pat, I'm not sure about the weather. It's almost blowing enough that maybe it's not even fit for a duck.
It's somewhat blustery.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'll have this, and it's sure nice to get the moisture.
Oh, you bet. It's still soaking in as we speak. So
we can expect precipitation throughout the day with accumulations of around a half inch. We are expecting the high to reach 41 degrees. Driving winds will be from the east-southeast at 25 to 35 miles per hour, so hang on to your hat. Tonight, we can expect gusty winds at 20 to 30 miles per hour as showers continue. Potentially, we could see freezing rain as temperature drops to a low near 30. Our waning moon, if we could see it, is at 79% illumination. Our current temperature is 34 degrees.
Thank you, Pat. And we're welcoming Bill Stodden this morning with the Salvation Army. Good morning, Bill.
Morning. How are you today?
Oh, we're doing pretty well. We shook off like a dog when we came into the station, but things are fine.
Sure.
You're with the Salvation Army, and gosh, this seems to be when everybody sort of identifies with you this holiday season. What can you share with our listeners?
Well, we are currently in the middle of our 2022 Red Kettle campaign. If you have been out and about in the community recently here, you've seen people at the front doors of grocery stores and Walmarts and that sort of thing, out there ringing bells and collecting money and wishing everybody a Merry Christmas. And so we're actually just hoping that more people will pitch in. We're just under about halfway to our goal with about 2 weeks left in the campaign. So we really need the people of Ames and Story County to throw money in those buckets, and that money then will go and help those who are in need here in Ames and Story County. And all the money stays locally. It's important to note. So, yeah, pitch in and help the poor.
Yeah, that's good to know. And even if that bucket is not staffed, it's there and available. And feel free to just toss your change in, or maybe even be even kinder and put a little extra in there.
Sure.
I have to be one of the first to admit that I don't put in every bucket that I pass by, and there's a little bit of guilt there. But I still get a Merry Christmas or whatever from the individual.
The whole goal isn't to guilt people into giving. Obviously, you're going to give from the bottom of your heart, and hopefully from the bottom of your pockets as well. But obviously, we're not interested in guilting anyone who walks by the bucket. But the thing is that if you got the money, you know, give what you can. If you don't have the money, obviously, you can't throw in there. You might be the people that the Salvation Army helps. The Salvation Army of Ames and Story County, we help about 420 families every single month with food security and with housing security. Some of the programs we offer are obviously the food pantry, where people can come in to the food pantry and get a full-size order, but we figured about 65 pounds of food for a month, as well as the fresh food market, which they can utilize twice a week, where they can come in and get fresh produce and basic perishable items like eggs, milk, and that kind of stuff. They can come in and use that twice a week. So we help 420 families a month with that, and with rental assistance and getting first month's rent deposit down and things like that. So all of these kind of programs are served by largely by donations from the people of our community. Obviously, we get a little bit of money from our national organization. We get a lot of help from the United Way and from the governments of the Story County and Ames and, you know, Nevada and Boone and Colo and whoever can give us any money that way too to serve. But we also rely largely on the donations. In a lot of ways, we're kind of like a public radio or a community radio in that sense, and that we rely on the donations of people to help us provide the programs that we do. And all of those programs, as I mentioned, stay right here in Ames and Story County, and they help the people in this county. We do have a great need in this county. Of course, there's a lot of people in this county who are food insecure. As a matter of fact, Story County has one of the highest levels of food insecurity in the whole state, simply because of the population that we have here in the county, college students, young families, you know, people who are working class and that kind of stuff. A lot of them live here in Story County, and a lot of them need a lot of help, and the Salvation Army is there to help them.
You know, I see that it's ironic that, you know, an agricultural state that there's food insecurity, and there's a few reasons why I can understand, but Pat?
Yeah, Mr. Stoddard, I'm curious about the impacts of COVID in the last few years on contributions or donations.
Well, you know, to be completely honest, we're a little bit down this year just because of the fact that so many people are coming out of COVID, and yet a lot of the support that they had relied on while they were in COVID has kind of gone away. And there's a lot of reasons for that as well. The federal government has cut COVID support for states, and of course, states have had to respond accordingly. But the thing is that a lot of people are living a lot closer to the margin this year than we've seen in past years. And so while we have an increased need for help and for services, we have seen a large increase of people utilizing the food pantry, coming in and getting food. And we have seen also a large increase of people who are also utilizing our Angel Tree program, which is our gift program, which also happens right around this time of year. We're not seeing a lot of the same monies that we used to see. Like, for example, last year we had a grant from one of the food bank, you know, organizations here in the state, and this year that grant wasn't there, just because of the fact that it was supported by COVID funds from the federal government last year, but now that money isn't there, so we couldn't apply for that grant to help people who are hungry at Christmas time get some food. So we got to kind of scramble to find other funds and donations from corporate donors and that kind of stuff to make up for the grant monies, which aren't there this year. So yeah, it's a lot tighter this year at the same time as that we have an increased amount of need just because of the fact that the support that we're getting from COVID money is now gone.
And when I would go to the convenience stores to get my newspaper or what have you, I started using the Shazam plastic card. You know, less interaction, you know, found myself not walking around with dollar bills in my left pocket
that were handy and available.
So I might suggest, you know, when it does come up to, cash back, rather than get the 20, maybe get, 10 and 10 ones or 20
That's
ones.
Right.
And then you can walk around and contribute to your server when you're at the restaurant or when you go by the Red Kettle.
There's also another way that you can pay. Like every sign has a sticker that goes across the bottom, which has a QR code that your phone can scan, and it will allow you to do electronic donations as well if you're into that. I think that more and more people are beginning to adopt that, and I think the Salvation Army is sort of making a move in that direction. We have been trying to run QR codes so we can have contactless donations and that kind of stuff. But for right now, the QR code is a little bit small. And so this is one thing we'll address in the future, is to make that QR code very prominent so people can actually then just, you know, scan it with their card or with their phone, or, you know, hit it with the card or whatever, and then make it an electronic donation in that sense.
Oh, I'll be done. The things you learn on Local Talk. QR codes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The technology is there. It's very easy to use. It's just, you know, a lot of people, you know, they are slow to adopt new technology and that kind of stuff. And so as that becomes more prominent, obviously the Salvation Army will respond and make that option, you know. I mean, it's currently available. It will make that option more prevalent and prominent on the signs as well. We still are at largely cash donations right now, although I know that some places, you know, maybe in the larger cities and everything, the electronic donations are increasing.
Bill, how does an individual, if they want to help volunteer their services to staff a Red Kettle, for example, who do they contact and how do they go about doing that?
So if you want to join the Red Kettle Corps, if you want to come down and ring, we still have lots of spots open for you or your organization. If your company or your, you know, civic organization or whatever wants to volunteer as a group, you can just go, very easy to sign up. It's really easy. They made it as easy as possible. Go to a place called registertoring.com, registertoring.com, where you can actually sign up on that website. Take 5 minutes, and I've done it myself, and I was really surprised at how easy it is to sign up. You merely put your name in and some contact information, and then you select the time that you want to ring. So you can ring as a group. We've had a lot of help from the Kiwanis in the area and also the JCs in the area, as well as, you know, fraternities and sororities here on ISU campus, who have just volunteered as a group. Six or seven people will go down and ring for a couple hours. You can sign up for your shift right there. Shifts are about 2 hours, but, you know, if you are feeling particularly generous, you can sign up for the whole day, take the bucket for the whole day, move people in and out as you want, and represent your group or your company right there at the kettle. We have, like I said, a lot of spots open, so we encourage people to do that at registertoring.com. We can sign up.
And we'll have that in our web page. We'll add that to it, so for contact information for you. What about individuals who have a need, Bill? How do they go about approaching the Salvation Army?
Well, here in Ames and Story County, our service center is at 703 East Lincoln Way here in Ames. It's right down the hill from the resource reclamation. It's kind of weird to say that. We're right down the hill from the dump, but we're right down the hill from the Resource Reclamation Center, and right next to the restaurant called the House of Chen, which is a really good restaurant. I'm not plugging them or anything like that, but just that's where we're located, right next there. You can walk in, or you can call us at 515-233-3567. So that's 515-233-3567. Call us up there. Let us know what you need. There's a pretty good chance that we'll be able to support something that you need, especially with food. If you're hungry, feeling hungry or whatever, and want to come into the food pantry, we can definitely get you in. It usually takes us a little while to get you an appointment. Like, for example, give us a day. If you need food right now, you know, it's kind of hard to do it. But if you give us a day, of course, then we can get you set up with an appointment, and then we'll get you in to get the food pantry. And it's totally free, and there aren't any eligibility requirements. Like, we're not going to be checking your bank stubs or things like that for the food pantry. Just the only thing is, if you identify that you're in need and identify that you'd like some food, we can certainly help out with that.
And do you take volunteers to help you there as well, or is that how does that work?
We absolutely do. The volunteers to help with the food pantry, we always welcome, of course, you know, individuals and groups as well. The process is a little bit more involved than registered ring. Unfortunately, I wish they'd make that as easy to volunteer at the food pantry, because they have an entire process that we have to go through. It usually takes a few days to get through the system and everything. Okay. But you can go on to Salvation Army of Ames and Story County's website, and at the bottom there's ways to volunteer, and then you just follow the links through to that, and you can get set up to volunteer there. Otherwise, I could give you a really big, long URL, which probably won't make any sense to people listening to your radio.
Okay.
At any rate, it's easier just to go to the Salvation Army's website and volunteer there.
Sounds great. Okay, Bill, in this last minute, have you got any last-minute things you want to remind our listeners with?
Well, the only thing I can say is give. We got the Angel Tree program coming up on December 21st. We got a couple more days for the toy drives that are going on around the community. The food drive is over, but the toy drives are still going on for a couple more days. And then we're going to be collecting those toys and giving those out to the kids on the 21st. But if you see the red kettles, you know, even if you just have a few cents in your pocket, every single thing that you could possibly drop in there will help feed and make sure that someone has a house this holiday season. And that, like I said, that money stays right here. It's really important for me to note that. And, you know, it's a good cause. It really is. I mean, we do help people who are in need, and we do help people who are in need without any sort of discrimination, as the mission of the Salvation Army requires us to do. And we do it happily, because this is how, you know, this is how the Salvation Army does the work of God here in the community. And yeah, we're happy to do it, and we're happy to be part of the community, and we really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Bread Kettles on your show.
Well, Bill, thanks for stopping in and visiting with us today here at the radio station. Absolutely. That's Bill Stodden with the Salvation Army here, Story County Salvation Army. And like Bill mentioned, everything that you contribute stays right here in the county for our folks in need. Thanks again, Bill.
Sure, thank you.
And we're going to switch subjects somewhat, but in a way, this is another need to help fit people's desires, and going to visit with Story County Conservation for our monthly check-in. And today we've got Special Projects Ranger Pat Sheehan. How are you this morning, Pat?
Oh, just out here enjoying the weather right now. So,
yeah, that, you know, folks don't know this, but when he says enjoy the weather, Pat really means it, because he's an avid waterfowl hunter and aficionado. So, Pat, what have we got for upcoming events for the public as far as enjoying the county conservation properties and amenities?
The best I can say right now is outside of the events, a lot of times with my job duties, I am working on a lot of the projects out there. So one of the more exciting ones we have is the Depe Family Conservation Area that mm-hmm. we're pursuing right now, right across the road from McFarland Park to the south. So I'm sure if people follow our newsletters, anything like that, they've seen information on that. The role I have in that is more, as of now, is working on the master plan
right.
with a local engineering group, and also some of the fundraising with that. And my part with that has been mostly for the grant writing. We put in for a LWCF grant, Land and Water Conservation Foundation, and we have received that. We're still in a process that's a long, drawn-out thing, but we're looking to hopefully get about half of that funded through that grant. Obviously, we're going to be looking for additional funding for the remainder of that property, but we're very excited to get that on board for the county conservation lands. That just, like I said, it ties directly right into our McFarland Park, which probably most people know.
And folks also need to know that it was the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation that helped step up to get a hold of that property, and the funds you are raising will go back and pay them off so they can continue to do that throughout the state and area. Pat?
Yeah, Pat, this is Pat Schlarbaum, and I might recall a really fond memory of 1985. I was working with some wildlife rehabilitators, and there was an Arctic-faced great horned owl. Now, that's somewhat lighter than our resident great horned owls. And we walked across the road from McFarland. It was before the Nature Center was there, but your headquarters was in that vicinity. And released this Arctic-faced great horned owl. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, this would be a great property for the Story County Conservation Board to look at, because it's like a rolling terrain. But that's literally, what, 35 years ago? and now it's coming to fruition. What a story.
Yeah, it's been a long goal. I mean, I know Steve Lekla, our previous director, he's been working on it for many years beyond that. So just developing relationships with landowners and respecting their wishes. A lot of times, you know, they want to see their legacies preserved or get their land, just see that it, make sure they want to keep it the way they want that, and except for, you know, any other versions of the land use they can get. So,
yeah, how many acres is that, Patrick?
Just a little over 120. I believe about 123, I believe.
Oh, real nice.
Yeah. Pat, if we can just ask you briefly, you've been with Story County Conservation now for a number of years, but I'm going to ask you two questions. How did you get interested in the natural world? When did that little seed get planted with you? And then maybe let our listeners know how you became a member of the staff there at Story County.
Yeah, I'll try to keep, you know, that halfway brief. I was, luckily enough, grew up in north central Iowa in the Eagle Grove area, so I grew up 150 yards from the Eagle Creek, which ties into the Boone River not too far down. I don't think I had shoes on until I probably had to go to school, so So I was always down there with that. My dad was a conservationist. He taught for Iowa Central Community College in biology, zoology, and then in physiology. So I kind of have broad research there. And, you know, living out in the country, you just have that. And I grew up duck hunting. We, you know, I'm old enough, too. Back in the day, in North Central Iowa, there wasn't a ton of deer until I started getting a little bit older. So I was just always outdoors, and that led to me going to Iowa Central Community College and then on to Iowa State. During Iowa State, I did have an internship with the Iowa DNR at Brushy Creek. It wasn't that too far away. Mm-hmm. Then once I graduated, I was working for the Iowa State Forest Nursery, and then I just happened to run into a fellow person from Eagle Grove, Joe McGovern, with the natural, at that time, he was from Story County Conservation, IRVM. He and Joe Quaker, the reason I became an intern for them, and that was my introduction to the county conservation.
Yeah, and for our listeners, the IRVM is the Integrated Roadside Veg Management Program. So you were an intern there. Interesting, Joe McGovern, who is now the president of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, was also an intern and employee for a while. So I and then you ended up in Webster County?
Yes, I was up in Webster County for, I believe, 18 years as a park ranger. Started out there, you know, trying to find jobs when you're, you know, pretty fresh out of college, and somehow lucked out a job 25 miles away from where I grew up. Loved it up there. I mostly did law enforcement out there, but a lot of the conservation work, timber stand improvements. I also worked a lot with the trumpeter swan restoration efforts up there. We had our Moreland Pond with the pinion pair up there of trumpeter swans, so I dealt a lot with them. So I've always had a kind of passion for that as well. And then, like I said, it was 5.5 years ago I moved back down here as a special projects ranger. So the most of what I do with that thing is a lot of, I mean, obviously some law enforcement, but a lot more of the project management, all the way from writing the grants. And once the project comes through, there's a wide variety of the projects we have, you know, from land purchases to developments, like the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. You know, we have the funding now to be paved halfway across the county, probably a third of the way already paved. So that's just some of the items that I do. It's out there, all the different project management, just because, you know, there's a lot out there, and it's, everyone knows Story County Conservation, we don't slow down very much. There's always something going on. So,
yeah.
The Trumpeter Swan connection there at Webster County, I think it was Karen Russa that was very involved with Trumpeter Swan work. And were they overwintering back in that era when you were working with the Trumpeter Swans, Patrick?
Yeah, they were. When I started up there, I met Karen, one of the first people I met when I started up there. And she was the one that kind of headed that up there. I believe she worked with you and with Ron Andrews. And but we had already, I think we had just gotten the pair. And
I remember
some
that.
Some of the other rangers had built the nest. Yep. So we had that, and then it just slowly progressed. And then we were taking in other resident pairs from areas that did not have aerators, because we were lighting up an aerator. So we would have, you know, 30 swans out there that we had to recapture. And it started getting kind of popular, and, you know, at times we had 70 to 100 trumpeter swans sitting on that pond.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, and it really developed through there. And then I come down here, and I drive over to Ada Hayden, and I'm, you know, kind of seeing the fruits of the efforts that I had out there. I haven't been out there for a while, but it's beautiful walking out there and, you know, seeing 70 to 100 swans out there, if not more.
Yeah, this current blustery weather, they'll be piling into Ada Hayden again, and what a show they put on.
Yeah, they've the 11 that we've got out there currently, and there's probably more by now because we haven't been out for a while, but they're coming, they're following out with the Canada geese out to feed on the fields west of Ada Hayden and also east. So we pretty much get entertainment out our way most evenings. So, Patrick, I want to ask about your special projects role a little bit more. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the improvements that are going to be made at the McFarland Park, the pond there. Have you been involved in writing grants and that kind of thing for us. And can you tell us a little bit about what some of the plans are for that facility?
Yeah, probably the largest part I've dealt with that has been the actual in-lake fish habitats for the design. I've been part of the, you know, the overall design of it, about trying to remove all the silt out of there. But the main thing I've been doing is with the fish habitat. I do have a fish habitat grant out there now, which actually we'll find out in 2 days or tomorrow if we have the funding. But we're going to be putting in a lot of fish structure in there, and it's going to be mostly rock as compared to any of the grants that we have, for the grants we're applying for. So we're talking rock lined spawning benches, you know, anywhere from 3 all the way down to 5 foot deep. We have a jetty out there with a corresponding jetty, or the corresponding fishing spawning bench going around there, and a couple of different rock piles out there. They, you know, these obviously cost money, so we're looking for grant dollars to do that. So I'm applying for a County Conservation Fish Habitat grant for that. So, it's been very nice. I was off last week. I did come back on Wednesday because I wanted to see the progress of them draining the lake. I came back yesterday morning, and all the old fish structure that's on the bottom of the lake is now sticking out, so it's quite intense. You see that, and you're just watching the progress out there. The contract wave on site, I do not know if he's working today, but I know yesterday they were moving nonstop, working on the dam. And one thing with that McFarland Lake, a lot of people don't realize that was built in 1949. So it's very old. I mean, usually ponds that size have a lifespan of 30 to 35 years, and obviously that's not more than that.
Yeah, so there's probably a lot of silt that has to be removed from that lake then.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's surprising, it held up very well, especially, you know, in the time it was built, we had an interstate get built right in the watershed, and I mean, literally touching the lake. So a lot of times when you get construction like that, you get a lot of inflow, but it actually held itself pretty well for its age. But at the same time, it was way overdue to get some attention to that, just like we did with the Hickory. So.
Very good. So what is the calendar, as far as the progression, that kind of thing? When are you expecting to complete that project? Are we looking at 2 years down the road, or?
Well, everything is very fluid when it comes to this. If you look at the Hickory Grove project, you know, when we did that, we were in 2 years of heavy rain. We couldn't get it to drain. And then once we got completed, we put, you know, the proverbial cork back in the dam, and we didn't get rain for 2 years. So that extended that project. This one, if we get the right weather, I think we'd have, you know, in wet summer, we could be filling up by next fall. Obviously, anything pops up, you know, a wet spring, anything like that, that will delay construction will cause difference. But we're hoping by next fall, we're filling that up. You know, it's really a comprehensive approach. We've already, you know, we've dealt with Iowa DNR, the fishery. So as soon as that water starts filling up, just like Hickory Grove, they'll be putting fish in there in the younger stage so they can start growing. So we want a quick turnaround on this. It's not the giant project, but it's much needed. And if I had to guess, we'd have water back in by next fall. Hopefully this drought starts lessening up a little bit and make it a little bit easier on us.
Well, it sure sounds like a great project. I know that County Conservation has really been upgrading their facilities. Of course, a lot of these, like Dakin's Lake, for example, I believe was the first property that the county had. And then Hickory Grove Lake was the next. And gosh, just it's kind of like polishing the tarnish off the silver here. And more folks are coming out to enjoy those properties. And I know you've been doing some work, you say trails and also the Tedesco Learning Center and along the Green Belt, the streams, the Skunk River, for example. I know you've been a part of that. Any last things you want to highlight, Pat, before we break for the day?
Oh, I think we've covered everything. Another project we haven't come up is the Soper's Mill, the water trail access, just north of McFarland, just up north there. We have received grants for that. They're written them for the reconstruction of that access where we had that rock ripple. How many times I've been down there to watch kids go over the rock ripple and then walk back and then go back over. So we're putting in a new parking lot, limestone outcroppings to watch it, and then two accesses, one below and one above, so people do not have to go across the dam if they're coming from upstream, and they can still enjoy the dam if they want to travel down. So we're hoping to get bids back in another month, and hopefully everything works out and we can start construction on that this summer. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Pat. That's Pat Sheehan with the Story County Conservation Board, the Special Projects Ranger, for our monthly visit. Thank you very much, Pat, and we'll visit again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
And we're going downtown just so we don't slip slide away to visit Susan Guasta this morning. Good morning, Susan.
Well, that's a good reminder. It looks a little bit slick out, and I hope people are giving themselves a bit of extra time this morning. We are keeping our eyes on the road and on the weather, always out there working hard to make those roads as safe as possible. But we need drivers to slow down and pay attention to the circumstances and drive accordingly. So yeah. Good reminder.
Yeah, it was on our deck this morning. It's right at the edge. It was 34 degrees. And when I let the dog out, she kind of slipped a little and then realized, I got to walk a little different.
Exactly. Well, tonight we have our city council meeting. Mm-hmm. It could be the only regular scheduled council meeting in December. We have a motion on the agenda to cancel the December 27th meeting, which is a holiday for city employees, so that would be a difficult time. We do have a workshop scheduled that's different than a regular scheduled council meeting. So there is the meeting tonight, and then 1 week from today, a workshop meeting on the waste-to-energy report. So that's what's coming up. Just a note on tonight's council agenda. An agenda item for the council to approve is the purchase of the Iowa DOT property on Lincoln Way. I think it's 122 North Oak, which is often referred to as the old St. Cecilia's property. Mm-hmm. That would be the site of the new Fitch Family Indoor Aquatics Center. So to move forward on the contract of purchasing that land for $2.9 million is on tonight's contract. So this will be a kind of a monumental city council meeting of kicking off the process of moving forward on building that community amenity. And that's really exciting.
Yeah, so it's not raining on that parade. It's actually providing some water for the aquatic center, right?
There you go. Well, speaking of rain and inclement weather, I brought with us this morning, yeah. Mike Brown, who is with our Ames Electric Department, to talk a little bit about what happens on days like today with our electric distribution system. These can be challenging times for our crews.
Yeah. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, we're doing well this morning. Yeah, what kind of situation do you face in weather like this? I would assume right now it's pretty stable, but it could lead to things.
It is, and you know, it always makes me nervous every time that I see, you know, I watch long range forecasts, and any time that I see anybody say the word ice, it makes me extremely nervous. But that being said, it looks like, looking at the weather conditions today and looking at all the weather maps, it looks like any ice accumulation is probably going to go to the north of us. So I think we're in the clear for today. But that takes us back to your original question. One of the big problems that we have, obviously, with wintertime weather is ice accumulation. Ice builds up on the lines, builds up on the equipment, mm-hmm. and as much as anything, we run into problems with ice buildup in the trees, and of course, that causes the tree limbs to sag, get heavy, and sag into the power lines, which
right.
is never a good thing. Always gives us trouble when that happens.
Well, I know you've got crews out throughout the year that you've either your crew or contracted to check those limbs. And I assume with private property, do they have to get permission before they can do that? Or how does that work?
Yeah, we always try to talk to the homeowners. You know, if we're working in the right of ways for the power lines, we don't necessarily have to have permission to do it from the property owner, but it's always better, you know, as in everything, it's always better to ask permission. Cause we want to work with the homeowners. And we rely on the homeowners a lot, let us know if they see a problem on their property to give us a call. And, you know, we're happy to go out and look at these issues where we may have a close tree limb to a power line, and work with the property owners and to get that taken care of for them.
Now, when you say give us a call, what's that number?
Yep. Okay, so that's a really good question, and I did want to mention that this morning. You can call out here during normal hours. 239-5514 is the office number out here. You can always give us a call. But if you look at, if you go to the City of Ames, cityofames.org website, under the electric tab, we have a list of all of our phone numbers for, you know, any type of issues that you're having, whether it's, you know, possibly a line down, or if your power is out, if you have questions about energy, our energy programs or conservation programs, all of those phone numbers are listed on the website. That's a great resource, even possibly to print that off and, you know, stick it under a magnet on your refrigerator. That way you've got those phone numbers.
Yeah. And that would be, you're talking about problems or things that folks notice. If an individual has a power out and they call you or don't call you because they assume their neighbor down next door to them has called you. What's the word there?
Okay, so, and we talk about this a lot because several years ago now, we put in an outage management system, OMS is what we call it, that helps us coordinate and dispatch for power outages. So the number to get to that service, 239-5240, and it's an automated, you'll get an automated menu, and you know, they'll ask you a few questions. The nice thing about it is if you have registered your phone number with customer service, the system automatically knows you as soon as it receives the call from your registered phone number, and it'll let us know that there's a problem. We want people to call, even if you suspect that your neighbor has called in. Give us a call. And because what the system does is it looks at all of these phone calls that come in and it places them, and it actually analyzes the system and gives us a really good idea, a really clear picture of what's happening and the possible causes for that. So the more calls that we get into our system, the quicker it can analyze what the problem is, and get us headed in the right direction. And that's, you know, obviously that's our goal, is to get out there as quickly as possible, find out what the problem is, and start the restoration process and get people's power back on for them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And you're working within the neighborhood, and I, you know, you talk about quick as possible. The quicker, the better, especially if you've got a situation where you've got a neighbor who's maybe on a support system, a pump for oxygen or something like that. It could be critical.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah, and that's one of the things that our system does is it flags our medical essential people, so that we know if somebody's on oxygen, if they have a possible heart monitor, these types of medical devices. As long as you register that, and again, you know, it's just like your phone numbers, call customer service and register. Let us know. And then it flags us and tells us if we've got people in that neighborhood that are without power that have these medical devices. And it gives us the opportunity to prioritize those customers.
Very good. You were mentioning your concern for ice on power lines transformers, those kinds of things. What happens with wind conditions with or without ice?
Yeah, and generally that's where you run into a lot of problems, is that as the ice builds up, you know, the equipment that we have out there in the neighborhoods, it's designed to withstand all types of weather conditions, and some ice buildup is generally, I mean, it's a known. We live in the Midwest, so we're going to get ice. But when you combine ice and wind, that's a whole different ballgame. you know, the extra weight of the ice on the equipment and on the power lines, on the poles, combined with high winds, can absolutely wreak havoc. Now, we've been lucky. Knock on wood, we have not had a major ice event in a long time. But I can remember back. I've been with the Electric Services Department for a long time now, and this is probably goes back 30 plus years. We had a major ice storm in Ames, and it was a night of absolute terror on the part of Electric Services because we were chasing these problems all night long. Luckily, that time we didn't have the wind to go with it, but mm-hmm. still we had so much ice build up in the trees and on the equipment that we had customers without power off and on going through the night all night long. So it does create quite the challenge for us. But again, hopefully, you know, we haven't seen it in a long time, and it doesn't look like there's anything anyhow in the near future that looks like it's going to be that bad.
Very good. People describe wire when in the wind conditions as galloping mm-hmm. lines. What is that?
Yeah. So, and this is a phenomenon that happens with these weather conditions when you get ice and wind at the same time. And you see it more out in the country, obviously, where you're going to have the high winds.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of engineering that goes into building overhead power lines in that construction process. One of the things that we look at is the length of the span between the poles and the type of wire that we use up in the air. And this is all designed to operate under normal conditions through the year and obviously into some inclement conditions also. But what happens is as you get ice buildup on the power lines and then you have wind associated with that, it changes the dynamics of how that was engineered. And the wind will actually cause the power lines to try to lift once they get ice buildup on them. And then they set up an oscillation and they start whipping up and down. And once that starts, if the wind conditions and the ice buildup is just right, it will continue to build. That oscillation will continue to build. It just hits the right frequency. And, you know, it'll go to the point where it starts tearing the equipment apart.
Sure.
It'll start tearing cross arms off the poles. It'll start breaking poles. Breaking the conductor, breaking the wire. It can be a real mess and a real challenge. But again, that does happen more out in the country mm-hmm. where you have, you don't have anything blocking the wind.
Right.
For long distances. In town, we don't see it a whole lot. Occasionally you will, but, mostly that's out in the country.
Sure. And I know, folks, when they see these devices on those wires, those are baffles to help interrupt that, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Correct, yeah. So you'll see it a lot on, and again, out in the country, you see it more often. You'll see it a lot on the, actually, communication lines. The lower lines tend to have those on them, and it does a good job of breaking, and that's exactly what it does, is it breaks that oscillation mm-hmm. of the line so that once they start whipping up and down, they won't continue that frequency won't
right.
continue to build, and it'll help settle them down a little bit.
Very good. I've got a question for you. You know, in the news, we've had some in the news lately security issues with mm-hmm. substations and that kind of thing. How does the city of Ames handle the security for their utilities? And I know you can't tell us everything because then it wouldn't be secure, but there would be some general
right.
things I'm sure you could share with us.
Sure. So, you know, and again, we're lucky within the city of Ames. We have we are a relatively small utility. We're one of the biggest municipal utilities, but, you know, in the world of electric transmission and distribution, we're relatively small. And we do have our substations and our critical infrastructure is all mostly located within the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the exposure that we're seeing in other parts of the country where you've got these, this critical infrastructure that's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
that's always an issue because, you know, how do you protect that? You can put up cameras, you can put up hardened structures, you can put up all kinds of perimeter deterrent, but still, without having without going to the expense of actually having manned substations and manned power equipment, it's hard to it's hard to keep an eye on everything all the time.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that being said, again, within the city of Ames, we kind of have that naturally because all of our infrastructure is located within the city limits,
mm-hmm.
and it's amazing how much the citizens of this community are invested in that type of thing. You know, we'll get calls if somebody sees somebody parked at a substation, or if they hear something that they think is out of the ordinary, they give us a call and let us know, and then we can run out and take a quick look and see what's going on. So that's probably the biggest thing, is that if people do notice things, just give us a call.
Very good.
It's typically going to be something normal that's going on, right. Normal activity, but still we want to know, because you never know. So we're more than happy to go check that out, and we rely on people giving us a call and letting us know.
Well, that helps build strong community when you take
Absolutely.
An interest in your utilities, things that are going on. So we kind of self-police and help you guys out, which in turn helps us. So,
yes.
Mike, any last words for our listeners?
Susan was talking about the city council meeting tonight. One of the things I did want to say, if anybody's interested in the smart energy rebate programs mm-hmm. that we have, these are programs that we've had going on for a long time to encourage people to, use their energy dollars wisely, to purchase energy efficient, equipment, things for their home. So they're going to be talking about that tonight. So we're rolling out some new, things with that program. I'm not going to touch on them specifically because I think that, Don Com, the director of the utility, I think he wants to make this announcement
sure.
when these things go through. But it is going to be on the council agenda tonight. So if
okay.
anybody's interested in what we've got going on for our rebate programs, you may want to tune in and listen to that.
Very good. Thank you, Mike Brown, with manager for the Ames Electric Distribution. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And now let's listen to a heart-to-heart that Anna Banana sent our way.
This is Anna Banana, your KHOY special correspondence for Local Talk with your heart-to-heart message. And today I am walking in Cleveland in the beautiful park with very good friends Jeannie Fleming Gifford and Mark Gifford, who have been friends with me for a long, long time. So we're out in nature in this beautiful weather. Fall colors are popping up, and we just saw deer running through. So it doesn't get better than that with a walk with Floyd. And you listeners know all about Floyd, so he is very happy as he goes on this new adventure. So Mark, how long have we been friends?
I want to say it's been 20 years, at least 20 years.
Wowza! I cannot believe that. But when's the last time that we actually saw each other and were able to give each other in-person hugs?
Oh gosh, how long has that been?
At least 15 years.
Has it been 15 years?
Yes, because wow. Do you know what? I remember when your daughter was born, but do you know I've never given her a hug in person until today, this weekend.
Wow, that's amazing. I hadn't thought it was that long, but yeah, you must be right.
So Jeannie, so how do you keep a friendship going for as long as that we've had? So you see her a little hesitation because as we're walking, there is a deer right in front of us just munching on the grass. Doesn't even care that we're right here, that even that Floyd is here. So that's what will happen when you get out in nature. There are actually two deer, listeners, walking by. So amazing. So Jeannie, as I look at these two deer who just don't even care that we're here, they look like they're friends and having a good time out in nature, what do you think the secret is to keeping a friendship going even when you don't see each other on a regular basis?
I think it's all about just communication. It's just reaching out. It's letting somebody know you're thinking of them, even if you're miles apart. And even if it's been a little while. And I think you just continue to keep connected in various ways. I also have loved that we've always done like things like our birthday boxes, right? Just silly things that have been special between us for years.
So tell the listeners about the birthday box, because they can do the same thing with their friends who live apart.
I don't even know when or how we started this. Most likely it was your mischief, but at some point in time, we had a shipping box, and that box was just filled with random things. Some things that, you know, like the Starbucks gift card and chocolate, and it didn't have to be anything too fancy or special or expensive, but it was just thinking of you as a person. And so I would receive that box for my birthday, which is the end of September. I'd reuse that box and send it back to you. And I think now we've been through at least two different shipping boxes. And the one now is pretty beat up, so we might have to go to a third.
Yes. Well, the nice thing about the box, too, is that there's added outside stickers on there and little notes. And what I love, too, is that, like Jeannie was saying, it doesn't have to be expensive stuff. It could be like 50 Lifesavers or like 50 Skittle boxes or whatever it is kind of thing. But just when you open up the box, you feel such joy and love and recognition and honor of the friendship. So Mark, I think that as you, we were walking past where you celebrated your milestone birthday, and as you think about friendships and moving through the years, what pearls of wisdom do you have for the listeners?
Oh, I think I just have to echo what Jeannie said. It's just being able to stay connected and, again, doing some things that aren't big, but they're meaningful. And just, you know, keeping that connection and just letting the other people know that, you know, we're still here, you're still important to us, and it doesn't have to be much, but just keeping that connection alive, and that really makes the difference, I think.
Yeah, because I think yesterday I drove up and then Jeannie and I did this presentation to a group of students to talk about our experiences in nonprofit work. And when we were sitting at that table, it was like there had been no time that had been separated. It was just like having a conversation with a really good friend to be able to figure out those physical cues of when it was time for me to talk. And I could just look at Jeannie. I'm like, okay, she's ready for me to talk about something. And then she would set me up to be able to say, okay, let's talk about this, about nonprofit management. And then last night, we were able to just go to Target, which, woohoo! I was so happy to just hang out with Jeannie and figure out how to get dog food and go to Target. There's no Target where I live right now, which is very sad. But Jeannie, you were talking too about, like, when we were asking what things do we want to do, like, we could go roller skating, we could go to the museums, but we were just hanging out. So what's that like?
Well, I think sometimes that just being together is enough. And I think sometimes in our world where there are so many choices, that sometimes simplicity is the best choice. I think our time together, like right now, walking in this beautiful woods, or this morning's early coffee, or having dinner together at home and not in a fancy restaurant, just, you know, it's just reminders of the things in life that we don't need so much more. And sometimes the basics, you know, feed our soul.
Ooh, speaking of feeding our soul, so Mark made two amazing pumpkin pies that were absolutely delicious, and homemade cream, which we put in our coffee this morning, which was a perfect way to be able to celebrate the day and our friendship. And we were able to, like Jeannie was saying, I think I was so happy to eat the chicken that Mark had made so lovingly with Ella and the mashed potatoes. And so you just feel like you could just at home. And I'm at home with my friends Jeannie and Mark always. So that's a good thing for listeners. And as we think about this heart-to-heart message and we think about our friends that are out there that are near or far, how do we make sure that our friends feel loved and cared for and supported during all kinds of times? Now, Jeannie and Mark have been with me through many life changes. And I remember the last life change when I moved back from England to Iowa and then got married this year. I remember Jeannie saying, well, you're never boring, Anna. Your life is always interesting. But I think all those life changes too, like you guys have stuck through all the changes that have happened in my life. And so what advice do you have for people who are going through significant life changes to sustain a friendship?
I mean, I would say, again, it goes back to a lot of communication. We have been together for a long time. I want to say we've been married for 28 years. And it, you know, always hasn't always been easy, but as we grow older, I think it's just being there and being present and just communicating with that person or people. And I think that really finding a way to connect, especially is, and again, it doesn't have to be anything big. Just finding that way to connect and just let that person know that you're interested in their life and you're interested in what's going on with them, and just being there for them in case they have to, you know, vent or have any other kind of issues they want to talk through.
Yeah, well, I noticed, like, just being with you as a family too, just about I can observe your friendship and the fun that you have. And I've seen the pictures on Facebook, Mark, where you like busted in your daughter's Instagram pictures to do your own poses. So there's a lot of fun and love and friendship between you and Jeannie. And 28 years, congratulations. That's a huge milestone to be able to do that. And navigating through all of life's changes can be a challenge. As you're saying, all relationships have their ups and downs, but just knowing that you can depend on the person So again, we're walking. You can hear us walking through. And what do you see? What were you pointing out, Mark?
I'm not sure. We definitely see a couple of deer ahead of us, but there was something smaller. Mm. I don't know if it was a cat.
We'll keep you posted, listeners. So, Jeannie, as you think about friendship and marriage, what advice do you have for those or thoughts about marriage and friendship?
Well, I think it's just working to keep finding ways to connect, to keep that friendship. You know, Anna, you and I were talking yesterday, I think especially when you're parenting children, that becomes a core focus of your relationship. And one of the things that I think is difficult is to keep those other interests. So, I mean, I think for Mark and I, you know, we found things like we want to hike the Buckeye Trail, something our 15-year-old would whine and moan about doing. So we find time to do that together. And it's a mutual interest and love. And that's something we enjoy doing as friends. And so I think that it is looking for those connections that are going to keep our friendship alive, right, that's outside of our caregiving activities.
And so that's a wonderful thing. And again, listeners, you're hearing our footsteps and we're in the nature and it's been an early morning of wonder. So speaking of wonder, as we wrap this up, Mark, can you give your final heart-to-heart message for our listeners today about friendship, marriage, and just what brings you joy?
Just, again, be as present as you can with your friends, with your significant other. Just be there and be present. And I know that's difficult to do a lot with today and technology the way it is. And a lot of times people get sucked into technology. But if you can find interests that interest you both and just lean into those and just keep communicating, that I think that's the most important thing to me.
That's beautiful. And Jeannie, you get the final heart-to-heart message for the day.
Well, I would just also say be grateful. I think sometimes life gets so busy and sometimes it's not always kind. And so having those reflections of gratitude, both for yourself, but also expressing them to other people. And it could just be a simple text that says, hey, I'm thinking of you today and I wanted to let you know. And I am grateful for you, Anna. Thanks for this opportunity and for a big adventure to Cleveland this weekend. It's been the best.
Yeah, so that's a perfect way to close out heart-to-heart messages with Anna Banana. So I'm going to kick it back to the KHOI team and wishing you all a very happy day.
Thank you, Anna Banana Mather, with your heart-to-heart message for us. And I want to thank co-host Pat Schlerbaum and to station manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk. A tug of the KHOI toque to producer Lynn Carey for her assistance with this morning's programming. We heard from Pat Sheehan with the Story County Conservation Board and Bill Stodden with the Salvation Army. And you also heard from Susan Guiasta and electric distribution manager Mike Brown.
Stay tuned for all things piano at 9 a.m. immediately following Democracy Now! Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And we'll
see you again
on the radio.
Hi, I'm Nancy August, author of the book Lucky Penny, and you are listening to KHOI Starry City AIM.